106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
All right, I'm very excited to review this, the new Netflix show, Squid Game. Now, if you haven't heard about this show, then where the hell have you been? Because everybody is talking about this show. It follows Seung Ji-hun as, well, Lee Jung-jae as Seung Ji-hun. And he's a guy who's down on his luck, has a kid. He's divorced, living with his mother. And constantly gambling his money away. So he gets an opportunity to play for money. And the games that he's playing and you know, include red light, green light, marbles, tug of war. So pretty much children's games, but there's a twist. If you lose these games, you fucking die. So yeah. That's the big thing of this show, is that these people are playing children's games to the death in hopes to win money. And every time a number dies, more money gets added to the winning pot. So, yeah, this is a really, really good show. There were moments where it was really slow, and especially in the last episode, just felt really slow to me, and you know, I wish they would have left it a little more just like, alright, this character won, so let's just like wait until the next season to see what he does next instead of do what they ended up doing. There's definitely nitpicks I have with this show, but overall I really enjoyed it. You know, there were American characters in the show. It is a Korean show on Netflix. You can either watch it sub or dubbed. I watched it dubbed. I know a lot of people would be like, a lot of Korean TV fans would be like, oh, come on, you have to watch it with subtitles rather than have it dubbed. For me, you know, I can watch some things with subtitles, but when I'm trying to actually watch something and get through it, I need to have it dubbed. That's just me personally. I'm sure a lot of like anime fans are going to judge me for that, but it is what it is. I like to enjoy shows and not have to do it how other people say the correct way is to do it. But yeah, basically you have a bunch of other characters in there who are also down on their luck. Let's see. We got Ali. He's number 199, I believe. Seung Ji-hun is, let me see, I have it pulled up here. They're different numbers. I'll probably just refer to them as their numbers. 456, so the main character is 456. We also have, let me see here. Sorry, I'm just trying to find the main characters here. Y Ha Jun as Hwang Jun Ho, or Ho. Is he the one I'm thinking of? I think he might be like the cop character in here. Oh Young Soo as Oh Tu Nam. Hopefully I'm saying that right. Probably not. I'm probably going to butcher a lot of these names, but he is character number one, or not character, but player number one. And he's an older man, so a lot of people don't team up with him because they think he's just going to die. But, you know, he kind of proves them wrong. I'm trying to find like the other main characters, but the IMDb is not doing me many favors here. It's written and directed by Dong Hyuk Hoang. Hopefully I'm saying that right. Why are there two different people with the name Ali? Oh, it's probably the dubbed versions. Crap. Yeah, this IMDb is not doing me any favors. We have Cho Sang-woo, played by Park House, Hae Sue. Again, probably saying this shit wrong, but I'm just going to bear with me here. I'm going to try and make sure I get these characters correctly. Sorry, one second here. If I'm not mistaken. Yep. So, 218 is Cho Sang-woo, and he is a childhood friend of the main character, number 456. And he's supposed to be the successful one, but, you know, inevitably he ends up trying to play for money, so he's in some sort of financial trouble. Yeah, who else we got here? Jung Ho-yeon, hopefully I'm saying that right, as Kang Se-byuk. Let me see if that's the character. I think it is. Pretty sure. Yep. So she's number 67, and honestly, she's my favorite character in here. I thought she was amazing. If you've seen the show, you know what I'm talking about, but let me see here. We also have Kim Joo, and she is an annoying ass character. Her number is 212. She is so annoying in this show for sure. You know, no offense to the actress, but we also have Jang Deok Soo, who is number 101, and he is the fucking worst of the worst out of all of them for sure. He is such a dick, and doesn't care who he has to screw over to win. I mean, a lot of these people are kind of like that, but there are teams that are formed, and the main team with number 456 is the strongest one out of all of them because they actually give a shit about each other for the most part. So that was kind of refreshing in this whole scenario of having all these people play games to the death. But yeah, really solid show. There's not a whole lot I want to say about it because I really want people to go watch this and give it a chance. I'm sure it's the kind of show that not everybody is usually, you know, interested in watching, but I would highly recommend it. I really do hope it gets renewed for a season 2 because I'd love to see where the story goes from here. But yeah, you basically have like these game masters, you have these different essentially guards, I guess you could say, that are dressed up in different costumes. They all have this like pink kind of parka kind of thing and these masks, and I believe there's circles, triangles, and squares. The squares are the higher ups, the triangles are the lower, and the circles, I'm not sure exactly what their role is, but they all pretty much do the same thing. It's just that some of them have more authority over others. But then you have the Game Master himself. And yeah, I thought the designs of those characters were really cool. The Game Master one was okay with his mask, but inevitably I thought he was a cool character. And I just love these high-stake children's games. Like, it's so fun to watch. But at the same time, they give you enough time to really give a shit about some of the characters in here. And so it really hurts when they die. Obviously not going to say which ones die and which ones live. Partially because I can barely keep track of the characters. But, you know, I really did love this show. And really can't wait to see what's next. I mean, there are definitely low moments of the show where it just kind of... There's kind of moments where you don't really care about. At least for me. Just like anything having to do with the real world where they're out living their normal lives, I usually just didn't really care for that. But whenever they were inside of, you know, the facility where the games were held, that's when I was most interested. Really solid show. I highly recommend you guys go check this out. Again, not a whole in-depth review or anything like that, and I'm not going to do a spoiler review for this. Just because I don't want anybody who hasn't seen it to just listen to the spoiler review and be like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, now I don't have to watch it. Because seriously, you're going to be doing yourself a favor by watching this show. It's fucking amazing. And yeah, it's a really popular show right now. It's It already has like fucking 3 apps on the App Store having to do with it where you can play the games in the show. So, and then they have like the Squid Game games on Roblox too. So, it's fucking popular as shit, and it got popular really quickly. So, I'm sure a lot of people, if you have friends that watch Netflix, I'm sure a lot of them have already talked to you about it. And if you haven't watched it yet, do yourself a favor and check it out. I would give this show a 9 out of 10. It's so different. Like, I haven't seen a show like this before. And the only thing I can really compare it to is Hunger Games. But this is way better than Hunger Games, for sure. Yeah, definitely go check out Squid Game on Netflix. It's a solid-ass show. I believe there's only 9 episodes. They're about 40-ish minutes each. Love all the characters in there. There's some characters that I hate, and, you know, some of those characters you're supposed to hate. I love the different games that they have to play. Just keeps you on the edge of your seat. You never know when a player's going to die, and you never know which one you like is going to die. So, yeah, definitely go check this show out. Again, thanks for bearing with me while I was trying to list off the characters there. The IMDb was not doing me any favors, and it's hard to keep track of the names and then the numbers and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I think you guys will really enjoy this. I don't care who you are. Watch this show. Unless you're like an infant, then don't watch this show because you're going to be scarred for life. But yeah, there's my review for Squid Game. Please, again, I've said this a million times already, but go check it out. You are going to do yourself a favor by watching it. So yeah, let's get on to the next review. The Many Saints of Newark is a 2021 film and is a prequel to the show Sopranos, which, full transparency, I've never seen an episode of The Sopranos, but this movie did make me want to watch the show for sure, and I had some conversations with people at work about it, about the show, so it definitely makes me interested to check it out for sure. The thing is, like, with those HBO shows, each episode's like an hour long. You get 6 seasons and a bunch of episodes per season. So it'll probably take me a while to finish it. I haven't even started it yet. But, you know, you got What If and stuff right now that I'm trying to finish, which I don't think I'll review by this episode, to be honest. We'll see. But yeah, it stars, let's see here, Alessandro Nivola, hopefully I'm saying that right. It's Dickie Moltisanti, hopefully I'm saying that right. You also have Leslie Odom Jr. as Harold McBriar, which, what is he from? Oh, yeah, he was Aaron Burr in Hamilton. Very nice. It was cool to see him in there. He was also Sam Cooke in One Night in Miami, which I have not seen yet, but I really need to check that one out. We also have John Bernthal as Johnny Soprano, Vera Farmiga as Livia Soprano, Corey Stoll as Junior Soprano, got Ray Liotta coming in as Hollywood, Dick Moldisani, Michaela De Rossi as Giuseppina Moltisani, can never say the last name right, Moltisani, there we go. We also have Michael Gandolfini as Tony Soprano, Billy Magnuson as Polly Walnuts, John Magaro as Silvio Dante, Michael Imperioli, hopefully I'm saying that right, as Christopher Moltisanti, which is actually a character in The Sopranos, played by the same actor. He was also Spider in Goodfellas, which is a big reason why I want to check this out for sure, because I love Goodfellas and these kinds of movies. Samson Moakiola, hopefully I'm saying it right, probably not, as Pussy Bonpassiero. My god, I'm probably butchering these. The thing I was really excited for, and this is the last person I'll put in my listing of the cast, fucking Joey Diaz showed up as a character called Buddha. Oh my god, the first time I saw Joey Diaz in this movie, I was like, hell yeah, dude, I hope this guy sticks around for a good majority of the film. I fucking love Joey Diaz. And if you don't know, he showed up in Spider-Man 2, the Tobey Maguire one, as the guy who said, you want to get to him, you got to go through us. So, yeah, you might recognize that character from the train scene. But I'm always happy to see Joey Diaz show up in something for sure. He's awesome. He also played Sal in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, so seriously, whenever he shows up on screen is a good day for me. But, yeah, I thought he was really good in this movie, too. He fit right in, for sure. But, again, this is a prequel to the show Sopranos. If you haven't watched The Sopranos, don't worry, I haven't either. Kind of showing the origins of Tony Soprano, kind of how he was raised and stuff like that. Dicky Moltisanti, I really liked his character. You kind of felt bad for him just because he kept getting himself in terrible situations, but at the same time, like, it was kind of fun to watch his life just be ruined by the stupid decisions that he makes. John Bernthal was pretty good. He didn't have a whole lot to do in the movie, I feel like. Vera Farmiga was also really good. Corey Stoll was amazing. Ray Liotta played two different characters in here, but it only shows him as one. Hollywood Dick Moltisanti, which is the father of Dicky. And he also played the brother of Hollywood Dick, who was in prison. So, yeah, at first I was like, are they being played by the same guy? Because I'm pretty sure that's Ray Liotta playing the dad and Ray Liotta playing the brother. So I guess it is. But, yeah, it was a really good movie. And I think Michael Gandolfini did a really good job. He's kind of like one of those actors on the rise. He showed up as Cousin Joe and Cherry. He was in a show called The Deuce as Joey Dwyer. Haven't watched that show and don't know what it's about, but looks like James Franco was in it. But yeah, overall, really good acting in this film. I thought the story of it was really good, too. I believe it took place, quite a bit of it took place in the 60s, and then some of it took place in the 80s, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. But there's some moments in here about riots, because I don't want to get too much into it. Because I don't want to spoil anything in case you guys want to go watch this, but there's scenes of riots in here, and I don't know, those scenes just felt really tense to me, and I enjoyed those parts a lot. I do love history, so anything having to do with back, you know, before 80s at this point, because I'm so used to seeing things set in the 80s, but anything pre-80s is usually really interesting to me. I just love, you know, the cars and the way people were, the fashion, the way they talked. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Newark is New Jersey. So definitely had some New Jersey accents in here. And yeah, definitely felt very Jersey. But overall, there's not a whole lot I can say about this film just because I don't know a whole lot about this show. But I can go off of what I thought of the movie, and I thought the movie was really good. It had some really funny moments. It had some really brutal moments. There were moments where you felt bad for characters. There were other moments where you thought the characters got what was coming to them. I love these kind of like gangster flicks for sure. Like, what was that one called with The Irishman? I really loved that movie. You know, it can be compared a lot to Goodfellas, but definitely a different kind of story to it, and that movie alone has actual like historical accuracy in there, and I really like that about it. Goodfellas is also a really classic movie. If you haven't checked that out, definitely go watch it. If you like Sopranos, you'll definitely like Goodfellas, and if you like Sopranos and you haven't watched Goodfellas, then what the fuck, dude? That's like a classic gangster flick. But yeah, I thought it was pretty good. You know, it was kind of a longer movie than it needed to be, and kind of left you wanting a little bit more, but at the same time, if you wanted more, you should just go watch the show. So this movie is definitely for people that have watched the show and know what happens in it, but it's also for people who haven't watched it and want to get into it, and it gives them a little bit of a reason to go watch it if they had doubts about watching it before, but definitely want to check it out now after watching this movie. So there's my review for The Many Saints of Newark. I'm going to give this one an 8 out of 10. I don't think it's a perfect movie, but it's really good too. it makes me want to watch Sopranos. So that's an important thing there. And I could see myself watching this movie again. So that's another plus there. So yeah, again, there's my review for The Many Saints of Newark. Let's get on to the next review. All right, No Time to Die is a 2021 film that has been delayed numerous times. And it follows Daniel Craig's James Bond. We also have Rami Malek returning as Lystifer Safin. Pretty sure he was in another one, right? Am I right about that or am I wrong? Might be wrong. Maybe I am wrong. Okay, well, I didn't see the last movie, so yeah, I'm wrong about that. Let's see if this lady was in... Oh yeah, she was Inspector. Okay, so Leah Sadox? Hopefully I'm saying that right. Coming back as Madeline. We also have Ralph Fiennes coming back as M. Ben Whishaw as Q. Naomi Harris as Moneypenny. We also have Jeffrey Wright, the Watcher himself, as Felix Leiter. Rory Kinnear as Tanner. Lashana Lynch coming in as Nomi, the new 007. And then Ana de Armas as Paloma. It's directed by Kerry Joji Fukunaga. Hopefully I said that right. And the screenplay is by Neil Purvis and Robert Wade, as well as Kerry Joji Fukunaga, Phoebe Waller-Bridge. The story is by Neil Purvis, Robert Wade, Kerry Joji Fukunaga. And the characters are by Ian Fleming. So, let me just give you the synopsis here. James Bond has left active service. His peace is short-lived when Felix Leiter, an old friend from the CIA, turns up asking for help, leading Bond onto the trial of a mysterious villain armed with dangerous new technology. Spoiler alert, that technology is a bioweapon. I feel like so many movies nowadays are having their terrorists use bioweapons. Like, so many. Like, Fast and Furious has been doing that. I'm pretty sure Mission Impossible did that, like, twice, maybe three times. Maybe more. Who fucking knows? I don't remember. I'm sure James Bond, this series, has done it plenty of times, too. Can we choose a different motive for these villains than to release a bioweapon? Because it's really overplayed at this point. But who knows? Maybe people like it. For me, I was just like, we've seen this way too many times. And with this movie, I haven't seen many of the Bond films. But again, I was thinking in the back of my head, we've seen this kind of movie so many times. Like, I don't know. It just has all those secret agent beats that we're so used to at this point. You know, you have the higher-ups who are doing some somewhat sketchy things. You know, you have the characters coming in that are opposing to the main character but are inevitably trying to do the same thing. And then they butt heads here and there. We have a strong, badass female character coming in and basically taking over the main character's, you know, old job, essentially. I don't know. I just feel like it keeps hitting all these tropes. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't watch a whole lot of spy movies, but I just feel like we've seen this kind of movie a lot of times. This is the send-off for Daniel Craig's James Bond. I did enjoy his character, and I thought the villain was fine, Rami Malek. I really thought he was Inspector, but I guess not, which I did not watch Spectre. The only Daniel Craig James Bond movie I've seen is Skyfall. Then I've seen, like, the first three original James Bond movies. So I'm not can't say I'm a fan of these. It's not like I hate them because I just haven't watched a whole lot of them. But I will say that I'm more of a Mission Impossible fan than James Bond fan, mainly because I have seen all those movies. But, you know, I thought this movie was pretty good for what it was. It did some creative things, I feel like. Had really good action, obviously. And I enjoyed the characters. I mean, Daniel Craig as James Bond is really good. So, I don't know. Just something about this movie just felt really generic and typical to me. I'm sure I'm going to piss off a lot of James Bond fans by saying that, and maybe just like a lot of, you know, secret agent spy thriller fans as well. But these movies are all kind of becoming the same thing over and over again. I like Mission Impossible because they have those stunts in there that Tom Cruise does, and you never can wait to see what crazy shit he does next. But also, I like the character of Ethan Hunt. I think he's very charismatic. With James Bond, he has charisma, but at the same time, like, with these movies, these James Bond movies, they're always super serious, even if they have, like, subplots in there that are just goofy. They take themselves a little too seriously sometimes. There are moments of comedy in this movie, really funny moments between characters. I thought Ana de Armas was really enjoyable in this film. I wish she had been in it for more. Maybe we'll see her again in the future in a different installment. But yeah, I just wasn't that big of a fan of this movie, to be honest. I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was really good and a really great send-off for Daniel Craig. But, you know, it just felt a little typical to me. I'm sure I'm going to be in the minority for this. And, you know, it is what it is. It really is. But, you know, that's just how I felt about this movie. I didn't think it was anything all that special. I think the motives of the villain were kind of vague. Not even kind of, they were pretty vague. Like, I didn't fully understand what he was trying to do. Maybe it just got lost in translation for me, or maybe they just didn't pay enough attention to his motives. But for me, I just never found the villain really compelling. You know, we have the character of Blofeld coming back, played by Christoph Waltz, which I do remember him being in Skyfall, if I'm not mistaken. Let me check and make sure I'm not talking out of my ass here. But I'm pretty sure he was the villain in Skyfall, right? Maybe not. Oh my god. Yeah, I really don't know anything about these James Bond movies, if you can't tell. He was Inspector, but again, I didn't watch that one. Okay, I remember the character in Skyfall now. He was, who was he played by? Javier Bardem. Yeah, I remember Silva. Okay. I really need to go back and watch these Daniel Craig movies, because it made me want to watch the other ones, for sure. There was a lot of things that I just didn't have the context for. So it'd be nice to go back and, you know, fully understand, you know, the motives of the characters and the history from them. But, yeah, I just wasn't all that impressed with this movie, to be honest. I thought it was shot very well. A lot of the cinematography was amazing, and the special effects and the action and all that, the choreography. I thought they did a really good job with all that. And all the action set pieces. But inevitably, I just wasn't all that impressed. So that's kind of my take on No Time to Die. And I'm going to drop a little spoiler here for you guys. So if you don't want a spoiler for it, just skip ahead like 30 seconds, because it's not going to take me long to say it. So skip ahead in 3, 2, 1. All right, if you haven't skipped ahead, you want to hear what the spoiler is, and if you haven't skipped ahead and you have watched it, then you already know, James Bond died. So, I was surprised they had the balls to do that, for sure. But, you know, good send-off, for sure. I like the send-off for him. Yeah, I'm going to wait a couple seconds here for the people that skipped ahead, because I have a couple more things I want to say. So yeah, if you're skipping ahead now, there's just a couple things I wanted to say. James Bond is a lot less of a, maybe not less of a badass, but, you know, less of a prick. Because for the longest time, James Bond was just this lady killer who was kind of sexist and, you know, just kind of had sex with women and then ghosted them, essentially. That's how I feel, at least. Just from knowing the James Bond movies, not having watched them, but just knowing the kind of stuff that James Bond does. But with this one, it's a lot more down to earth. Like, he's a lot more down to earth, a lot more emotional. You know, he's not fucking crying or anything, but he has more depth to him rather than just being this, like, you know, just this lady killer, fucking, let me get a martini, shaken, not stirred. I'm going to talk to this hot lady, take her back to my room and have sex with her. I mean, there's a couple moments there where you think he's going to do that, but, you know, it doesn't end up being like that. Which I'm glad, because it's just like, let's stop with this whole, you know, let me take you back to my room kind of stuff. But, you know, that's just me. I'm sure a lot of people like that. But they definitely switched it up a little bit from how it typically is with James Bond and these kind of badass spy characters. But yeah, there's my review for No Time to Die. I would probably give this movie a 7 out of 10. I thought it was really well directed and written, and, you know, the cinematography was amazing. There's a few moments in the back of my mind that I'm just thinking, like, oh, that was so cool looking. But overall, just personally not having the context from the other movies and then just kind of having a lot of the same tropes that a lot of these kinds of movies have, that's why I'm only giving it a 7 out of 10. But I'm sure a lot of people are going to love this movie for sure. So, yeah, if you want to go watch it, definitely check it out. If you like James Bond, you're going to love this movie. Or maybe not, you know? Maybe it's too different from what you're used to, but for me, I enjoyed it, and I thought Daniel Craig was amazing as James Bond once again. He's definitely my favorite James Bond so far, but again, I've only seen, oh lord, who was the original one? I'm trying to think. What was the original James Bond called? I'm just going to search Thunderball, because I know that's maybe like the second or third. Sean Connery. He's a really great Bond for sure. So it's a tie between him and Daniel Craig for sure. Like, I don't know which one I like more. I think I like Daniel Craig a little bit better as an actor. So maybe I'd go with him. But yeah, again, there's my review for No Time to Die 2021. Finally came out after so many delays, but yeah, go check it out if you like James Bond, and if you don't, maybe go watch the other films first so you have a little more context, at least the Daniel Craig ones. I'm not saying you have to go back to the original Sean Connery ones to have all the context leading up to it, because I'm sure that it, you know, I'm not 100% sure. I don't think they ever explain the, like, actors changing out and having the same name for the character. But there's, like, a theory that the name passes on to other people, I guess. I don't know. But overall, I enjoyed it for what it was. Just kind of thought it was a little generic, to be honest. And I don't know. It was a good last hurrah for Daniel Craig's James Bond. So there's my review, and let's get on to the next one. All right, and my final review for this episode in terms of watchable content is Venom, Let There Be Carnage. So this is the 2021 sequel to the 2018 film Venom, starring Tom Hardy. And what can I say about this film? I was very disappointed. Did not have very high expectations going into it. And inevitably, I got less than what I was expecting. You know, the character of Carnage is such a great character in the comics, and so brutal, so fucked up, and violent. And in a PG-13 setting, you just can't really portray the character that well. I thought it was fine having Venom himself, like, just that character in a PG-13 setting in the first one. Fine, whatever. But with this one, I have to say, I didn't really care for 2018's Venom all that much, but I do prefer it over this one. Just because this movie disappointed the fuck out of me. Woody Harrelson comes in as Cletus Cassidy, aka Carnage. Michelle Williams comes back as Anne. We also have Naomi Harris coming in as Francis Barrison, also known as Screech. Reed Scott coming back as Dan Lewis, the fiancé of Anne. Stephen Graham as Detective Mulligan, and Peggy Liu as Mrs. Chen. Yeah, again, I'm really disappointed with this film. Right off the bat, I'm just going to give you my review for it. I gave it a 4 out of 10, and that's what it's been at since I watched it. I did watch it twice. First time, I didn't watch it all the way through just because I was over it, and it was, you know, I was watching it after work, and I was tired too, so wasn't in the best mood to watch it. By the second time I watched it, I got to the same point I was at the first time watching it, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to like this movie very much. Like, I might have been in a bad mood last night, but, you know, I'm in a fine mood today, and I still don't like it. Again, it's just mainly Cletus Cassidy, aka Carnage, that really disappointed me. I don't read a whole lot of comic books, which I'll actually be talking about a comic book in a minute here. But, you know, I know enough about Carnage to know that this movie did not portray Carnage the way that it should have. I thought Andy Serkis could do a better job when directing this film, but also the director can only do so much with the script that they're given, and then also having the studio, you know, chiming in and giving their different ideas and inevitably being like, oh yeah, let me give you some ideas. Oh, you don't like those ideas? Too bad, put them in the movie. Sony has been known to do that. Warner Brothers is known to do that with their DC films. Just let your fucking creators do what they do best. There was a lot of this movie that felt like it was cut from the film just for time's sake. This isn't even an hour and 40 minutes long, which you might be thinking, oh, Spencer, that's not that long of a film. Spencer, that's a pretty long film still. Not really, because it goes by really quickly. By the time you get to the final climax of the movie, it felt like it was only like maybe 45 minutes at most. And, yeah, they just really did the character of Carnage dirty. And, yeah, they made this movie way too fucking goofy for the subject matter of the film. Having the serial killer with a fucking banana symbiote going out there killing people. Like, I was listening to Jeremy Johns talk about this in his review, and he was talking about Carnage in a book using somebody's head as a fucking bowling ball. And it's just like, in this movie, the fucking creepiest thing we have him do is stick his tongue down somebody's throat. And I mean, that's pretty disturbing, but still, that's the craziest thing Carnage does in this film, to be honest. And that's pretty disappointing for me. I do like Tom Hardy in the role of Eddie Brock / Venom. He does do the voice for Venom, in case you didn't know. You know, Carnage, Cletus Cassidy was all right. I don't know. Shriek was okay, but she kind of felt shoehorned in there. Yeah, I was just really disappointed with this film. Definitely not going to be watching it again. And it makes me nervous for, you know, upcoming Venom projects that they're doing. But yeah, I mean, the only saving grace for this movie was the post-credit scene. If it weren't for the post-credit scene, I probably would have left early. But, you know, I'll get into that in a minute here. It is a big spoiler, and really the only big spoiler of the movie. I mean, there's a couple things that could be spoiled that might ruin the experience for you. But the post-credit scene is the most important thing in this movie, and that just feels how it should not be like that. But yeah, I'm gonna get into that post-credit scene here in a second. So if you don't want to hear any spoilers for this film, if you haven't watched it yet, if you haven't seen the post-credit scene, which it's leaked all over the internet, so you probably have seen it or heard about it by now, but just in case you haven't, I'm gonna be talking about that right now. So I would say skip ahead maybe like 5 minutes. I'm going to wait until it gets to the 6 minute mark for this recording. But yeah, skip ahead 5 minutes in 3, 2, 1. Okay. So the post-credit scene, the only good part of the movie for me. We have Eddie in what seems to be Hawaii or some other tropical place. And they're sitting in this rinky-dink hotel room watching telenovelas, and Venom talks about, hey, I have a lot of information about the universe and shit like that, and you just don't even know about it. So I'm going to tell you about that. And then when he says, all right, let me give you a taste of what all the information I know. And then things start to shift and the room becomes a different room. And then you see J. Jonah Jameson on the screen talking about how Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And then you see Tom Holland on the screen just looking really weird. Like, I don't know, it just felt like a really weird, you know, video of Peter Parker in the Spider-Man suit that they put in there. Just felt like he was on a green screen looking around confused. And it's just like, why would they choose that shot? Like, just putting Tom Holland on a green screen wearing the Spider-Man suit without the mask, just looking around confused. Like, it doesn't even seem like it's part of the movie. I mean, sure, a bystander might be taking a video of him, but at the same time, it just looks so out of place for like, you know, an eyewitness video. I don't know, it just looked really weird to me. But at the same time, I was excited to see Spider-Man in the post-credit scene and the implications of it. And I have a pretty good feeling Venom's going to show up in No Way Home, which worries me a little bit because I don't care that much for the character of Venom, at least portrayed in the movies so far. So, you know, it does worry me a little bit for sure. And No Way Home is already jam-packed full of villains and other characters to the point where I'm just like, I feel like Spider-Man's barely going to be in this fucking movie. Like, we're going to have Scarlet Witch, Matt Murdock, Doctor Strange, Green Goblin, Doc Ock, Electro, probably Sandman, probably maybe Lizard at this point. I'm not 100% sure on that. It could be Venom that was in that cage or whatever that we saw in the trailer. Who else is going to be in this movie? Probably Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, even though they keep fucking denying it. Go check out the new Corridor Crew video where they talked about the leaked Andrew Garfield footage and confirmed that it was most likely real. Definitely go check that out. It's the worst kept secret in terms of superhero movies right now. Like, everybody knows they're going to show up in that. How could you have Alfred Molina as Doc Ock, you know, Willem Dafoe as Green Goblin, Jamie Foxx as Electro, and not have their respected Spider-Men from their universes? Just doesn't make sense to me. But, you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see. You never know. Maybe they're not going to be in it, even though I'm like 99.9% sure they are. But yeah, having Venom show up in Spider-Man No Way Home just worries me a little bit. And also, it's just like, why would Venom have a reason to go after Spider-Man? I mean, sure, he might think that he's a villain and killed some other dude, but at the same time, it's just like, I feel like Eddie and Venom have bigger problems than, you know, going after Peter Parker. Am I right or am I wrong? I don't know. But yeah, to be honest, again, it really does worry me. Because I don't know where they're going to go with that. And, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. But, you know, they're supposed to cross over at some point. So, we'll see when that happens. Maybe it won't be in No Way Home. But maybe it will. Who knows? But, yeah. There's all my spoiler stuff for that, really. That's pretty much all I had to say. There's really nothing else to spoil in the movie other than some deaths. Other than that, it's just like, again, I was really disappointed by this movie. And after we hit that 5-minute mark where people skipped ahead, I'm going to say one more thing. So, yeah, let's just wait a couple seconds here. All right, and for those of you who skipped ahead, I just had one more point I wanted to make. You saw it in the trailers and all that, but Venom at the rave, that whole sequence was unnecessary and just fucking stupid. Like, we did not need that in the movie at all. And I'm sure there's a million deleted scenes at this point, and I would have rather had some actual decent character development with like Cletus Kasdy or something like that. rather than having this stupid fucking sequence of Venom going to a rave. I really hated that. I mean, people seem to enjoy it in the theater, but it's just like, why did we need this? And the answer to that is we didn't. We really did not need to see Venom at a rave. So yeah, there's my disappointing review for Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Again, I'll give it a 4 out of 10. Again, I really wasn't expecting a whole lot from the movie, and I got even less than, you know, what I was expecting. So yeah, let's get on to my review for Invincible Volume 1. All right, Volume 1 of Invincible. So I really thought this comic would go into a lot more detail than the show, but it's actually the opposite. I think the show goes into more detail than the comic itself. I have been wanting to read the comic for a while, ever since I watched the first season of Invincible, and it follows along the show pretty well. I mean, there's some slight differences, and then there's some really big differences. I don't really want to go too in-depth with anything, but there's some small stuff that I can talk about here. You know, the whole thing with Amber, she's barely in this first volume. I really did not like that character in Invincible, and I'm definitely not alone, because I've heard a lot of people complain about that character. But yeah, she's like barely in the comic at all, which I don't know, it's fine. You know, I can give or take having that character in there. And I'm sure that they're going to build upon that character more in the next volumes, which I'm going to be reading. Don't know if I'm going to do a review for each one, but maybe. Yeah. There were a lot of things that they did differently in the show rather than in the book, which obviously the book came out first. Like Cecil played a lot smaller of a part in the first volume of the comic than he did in the actual show in the first season. Some of the characters were a little bit more different than they were in the show, like, what's her name? Now I gotta look up her name. I can't remember it now. Debbie Grayson. She's a little bit more different in the, not even a little bit, she's a lot different in the comic than in the show. She's a lot more, a lot stronger of a woman in the show than in the book. She seems a lot more frail and you know, fragile in the book than in the show. She stands up for herself and shit like that, and she doesn't put up with Nolan's bullshit. We got to meet the characters like Monster Girl and Shrinking Ray. Shrinking Ray in this was actually a guy. There's actually a few characters that were gender swapped for the show. Green Ghost was a guy in this first volume, and a girl in the show. Shrinking Ray was a guy in the comic and a girl in the show. What else here? I'm trying to think if there's any other huge differences. Not really. Yeah, I would say everything else is pretty similar in terms of the characters. But there are some slight differences here and there. I really did like the first volume of this comic, though. It just felt like it rushed by a lot of stuff quickly. I get it, it's a comic book, and, you know, you get certain issues, and they don't last that long, because they're, you know, kind of, not self-contained, but just, like, quick and to the point. And the show delves so much deeper into these characters than the comic book does. And that's what I really love about the show, is that you have like a 30 to 40 minute show where in each plot line you get in these comics, they expand a little more on it and get to make it a little more violent. Spoiler alert for the first episode of Invincible, but the part where Omni-Man kills the entire Guardians of the Globe, that was a lot more intense of a scene than it was in the book. It was a lot better of a scene in the show than in the book. There's just a lot of like small differences, and then there's things that are like pretty much shot for shot in the show. but I'm not complaining about it. I get that the comic book and the show can't be exactly the same. I'm excited to read ahead because the whole first volume is basically the first season of the show. And so I'm excited to read ahead and see what might be happening in the next upcoming seasons. So that'll be interesting to see for sure. You know, there's always those slight differences. And then there's certain things that happen in the book that don't happen in the show. And then certain things that happen in the show that don't happen in the book. That's pretty common when it comes to book to media or book to like TV show or movie adaptations. There's always differences. For me, I was expecting the book to be better than the show. I prefer the show over the book, but still, I'm going to read them and I still enjoy them. Just a lot different for sure. You know, there's certain like episodes that aren't plot lines in the book, like the episode where he is escorting those astronauts to Mars. That didn't happen in the comic at all. Most of the other stuff, though, is in the comic books, like Alan the Alien, you know, the whole Guardians of the Globe thing, even though it played out a little bit differently in the book than in the show, and then the fight between Omni-Man and Mark. Kind of spoiling some stuff here for the show, but, you know, it's been a while since it's been out, so you should definitely check it out if you haven't already seen it, but it's a great show for sure, and the book is really good as well. It's written by Robert Kirkman, and I believe he works on the show as well, so it seems like it. So that's good, at least. It's coming from the creator of the book himself, so, like, if there's things he wants to expand upon in the show, then he definitely can, because it's, like, his creation. So I thought that's really cool. And reading this definitely makes me want to rewatch the first season, for sure. It's such a... It's almost... Except for, like, a couple characters and, like, an episode here and there, it's practically a perfect show to me. I just love so much about that show, and I can't wait for another season to come out. I hope it gets a bunch of seasons for sure, because it's one of the best shows I've watched in a long time, and I've watched a lot of really good shows for sure. But yeah, there's my review for the first volume of the Invincible comic, and with that, I'm done with the episode. You might be wondering where my reviews for What If is, because that show just wrapped up. I'm going to do that in the next episode, and I'm probably also going to review the Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, because on my break, I never reviewed that when I came back. So I definitely want to talk about it, because I've seen it more times than I can count at this point. I've seen it so many times, and I really love it, so I would like to talk about that at some point. Let's see what's coming out soon, and I'll try to tell you guys what I'm going to watch. Let me see. There is the new Addams Family movie, but I didn't watch the first one, so I'm probably not going to watch that. Let's see. Halloween Kills comes out on the 15th. The Last Duel. Definitely want to watch Halloween Kills, so I'm definitely going to be reviewing that. And then I'll probably end up watching The Last Duel. Dune's coming out on the 22nd, as well as the French Dispatch, which I'm interested in watching that one. It looks interesting to me. Yeah. And then Ghostbusters Afterlife comes out November 19th, which I am very excited for. Then on November 24th, Encanto comes out, which I'm definitely going to watch. But yeah, the next episode, I'll probably review Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, the What If series, Halloween Kills, and The Last Duel. So thank you guys for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. I'm on Facebook and Instagram at Pop Culture Podcast, and I will see you in the next one.